Okay, we begin here on the top of Nun Gimel. Now, I'll put the first line. The Gemara here is discussing the Ketoret that the Kohen Gadol brought and the procedures by which he brought the Ketoret. Here, the Gemara is about to enter into the Machloket that we have between the Prushim and the Tzedukim as to where the Ketoret was done. There's a Machloket between the Prushim and Tzedukim as to when you put the Ketoret onto the pan. As far as the Prushim are concerned, and we're going to learn the Limud right now, they put the Ketoret on the pan only once he had entered into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. We saw that in the Mishnah. The procedure is he takes the machta with him, he places it down, ben abadim, and then he puts the ketoret on the pan. The Tzedukim, on the other hand, believed you put the ketoret on the pan before he entered into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And then only then did he enter into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, because the pasuk says, ki be'anan era'el ha-kaporet. If you want to enter into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, you have to come in with the ketoret already burning. It has to be already going. So that's what we have in the pasuk here. It says, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Daber l'Aron Achicha, v'ayivol b'cholayt el Hakodesh mipeit haparochet opnei hakaporet asher l'Aron, v'imut ki v'anan irei al hakaporet." Truth is that there's a major machloket amongst the mifarshim of the Torah as to what the anan is that's referring to here. Ki b'anan is a term that is used both by the ketoret, and anan is also a term used for the presence of the Shekhinah. So it's not clear which one is being represented over here. There is a machloket about that, but the Tzedukim believe that you put the ketoret on before he entered into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Just as an aside, their machloket is very interesting because the ketoret itself acts as a smokescreen. It's actually a divider. Whenever we talk about the ketoret or the cloud of the ketoret, it functions as a screen or a divider between two parties or two individuals. Over here, the way that the Prushim have it, the Kohen Gadol enters, and then he puts the Ketoret onto the pan. So that means that Hashem is on one side, the Shekhinah, the presence of the Shekhinah is on one side, the Kohen Gadol and the rest of the Yam, everybody else is on the other side of the Ketoret. The way that Tzedukim had it, is that he puts the Ketoret on before he enters into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and therefore there is the Kohen Gadol and the Shekhinah, and the cloud, and then the rest of the Yam, everybody else is behind it. Meaning that he puts the separation between himself and Hashem, and everybody else is behind it. I think it's just interesting because of the nature of the Tzedukim. The Tzedukim were made up of many of the Kohanim. The Kohanim were a party to the Tzedukim. We see that, first of all, throughout the Gemara here in Yoma. They had to take a Shavuah because they were afraid of the Kohen Gadol, who was a Tzeduki. But they found a lot of, I don't know if it was sympathy, or a tremendous amount of the Kohanim were participants in the sect of the Tzedukim. So that's number one. Number two is, it had a aristocratic side to it, which is that they're the Kohanim and were separate from the Am, versus the Prushim, who saw themselves as more of a part of the Am. Part of why we spoke about this earlier with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai about the Chorban HaBayit, how that changes the dynamic. The power of the Kohanim is vested in the Mikdash. As long as the Mikdash is around, the Kohanim are major players and have the ability to influence the Am significantly. And them being Tzedukim is a big problem in that sense. On the other hand, after the Churban HaBayit, the power shifts to the Rabbanan, shifts to Yavne, and it takes away that base of power of the Tzedukim, and it shifts to the Prushim, because the Kohanim are no longer in power. So it's interesting that they view the Kohen Gadol being on the same side as the Shekhinah in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. We're different, we're separate from the Am. And the Prushim viewed it that the separation was done between the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shekhinah, and everybody else, including the Kohen Gadol, who's on the other side of the Ketoret. Right, that's just by way of background. Now the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan, V'natan et HaKetoret al HaEsh lifnei Hashem. You put the Ketoret on the Esh lifnei Hashem. Shelo yitaken mibachutz, don't put it on outside, v'yachnis, and then take it in. Lotzim yiliban shel Tzedukim, this is to challenge that position of the Tzedukim, Shomrim itakem b'chutz v'yachnis, that they should fix it on the outside and take it in. My drosh, what did they darsh? Because they darsh in the pasuk, ki be'anan ira'eh ala kaporet, that with the anan, I will appear on the kaporet, melameid, shitakem b'chutz v'yachnis, that you have to fix it on the outside, and then go in. So you have two psukim here, both found in Achrimot. In the introduction, in introductory psukim to Achrimot, you have ki be'anan ira'eh ala kaporet. Later on, when it discusses the actual bringing of the Ketoret inside, then it says, "V'natan et haKetoret al Esh lifnei Hashem." So there, it sounds like that is lifnei Hashem done. So you really have, in a sense, a stira in the psukim. The pasuk that talks about the actual avodat haKetoret says, "Do it lifnei Hashem." The earlier one seems to imply that you have to come in ti be'anan ir al ha-kaporet, come in with the anan ha-ketoret already growing. So amr lehem chachamim, al klo kvar ne'amar, v'natan et ha-ketoret aleish lifnei Hashem. How can you say that about ti be'anan ir al ha-kaporet? The latter pasuk says to do it lifnei Hashem. Imkain matam lomar ti be'anan ir al ha-kaporet. So then what do they do with that pasuk that the tzedukim use? The mage notein ba male ashan, that you have to actually add into it male ashan, which is something that Koaz did to smoke and go up in a tower-like fashion. Minayin notein ba male ashan. How do you know you have to put male ashan in it? Shenemar chisa anan ha-ketoret et ha-kaporet. So that's the latter half of that pasuk that we read before, which Shaul was quoting, which is Venatana Tektorat Talish Lifnei Hashem V'chisa Anana Ketorat Etakaporat Asher Leidub V'lo Yamut. So now it's interesting. The Brayta, the Gemara is going to come back and discuss this. The Brayta said, "How do I know you need Malei Hashan?" When it says Ki Banan Erel Akaporat, then it says, "How do I know you need Malei Hashan?" And then it quotes the pasuk Chisa Anana Ketorat Etakaporat. It quotes two sources for the fact that you need Malei Hashan. Saha Lo Natan Ba Malei Hashan. If he didn't put the Malei Hashan in it, o chiser achat mikol simaneha, or if it's missing any one of its ingredients, chayav mita. Then he's chayav mita because of the introductory psukim to Acharimot. It says, "Vayom Hashem Moshe daber Aaron achicha al yavo b'cholei tel kodesh mipei laparochet d'bnei akaporet asher Aaron v'lo yamut ki ba'anan irei lakaporet." So if he doesn't want to die, he comes in with the ketoret. But the implications are that if he doesn't follow this procedure, then he would be worthy of death. So if he comes in with something that's not ketoret, then he has a problem. Then he is due the death penalty in that case. Mar says, "V'tiblei dekama ayo bia reikani." Forget about missing something from the ketoret. Let us just say that he has a problem here because now he entered into the Kodesh HaKodeshim without anything to offer. There's a separate issue, nothing to do with the ketoret. There's no difference of whether he comes into it with a ketoret that's missing one ingredient or if he comes in with nothing. He's not allowed to enter into that area. He's deserving of the death penalty just for entering without anything in hand, without the proper offering to come in. So why are you worried about missing an ingredient or the Malei Hashan? Just simply say he's coming in without the requisite ketoret, or he's coming in a bi'ah reikanit, he's in trouble. Case here is that he's shogeg with regards to the entering. I mean, as in terms of entering into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, he thinks whatever he's doing is fine. He doesn't think there's a problem. That's a shogeg. He can't get the death penalty when you're a shogeg. On the other hand, he's mezid in the fact that he took in a ketoret missing an ingredient. So he intentionally takes in, or knowingly takes in, ketoret missing an ingredient. He thinks that he could go in there anyway. So the going in, or the bia, is not what's causing the problem. The problem is that he's entering in with a ketoret missing an ingredient. Rav Ashi Amar, afilu teima hizid bezu bezu. Could be a case where he's amazed by both issues. Kagon, the ayo, shtei aktarot. He brought in two things of ketoret. Achat shlema, one that had the requisite ingredients. Vechat chasera, and one missing the ingredients. Abiyalo michayev, in terms of entering, he's not chayav. Daha ayole shlema. He's not chayav for the bringing the shlema or coming in reikanit because he has what he needs. He has the requisite ketoret to enter. So his only failure is here, is that he's doing aktara michayev. He's going to be chayav for the aktara of the ketoret that is missing an ingredient. Daha mikater ketoret chasera. Because he's being makrivir, a ketoret that's missing an ingredient. So in this instance, we've cleared away the problem of bi'ah reikanit. Bi'ah reikanit by itself would have been a problem. Just entering is an issue. But now we also have an additional issue, which is that the ketoret missing something would be chayav mita as well. If he would get over the bi'ah problem, then we have a separate issue, which is velo yamut. In terms of chisa nan ketoret asher leidud velo yamut. We have a separate issue, which is velo yamut of the ketoret. Says lo yamut, both in the procedure of bringing in the ketoret, as well as in the introduction of achrimot. So it's twice. They have two lo yamut that are found in the pasuk. One lo yamut is telling you that if you're missing an ingredient, you're deserving the death penalty. The other one's telling you if you show up without the requisite items that you need, you're chayav mita as well. So that's a bi'ah reikanit. So whether he shows up with nothing, or whether he shows up with the missing ketoret, he's chayav mita just for showing up. If he somehow gets over the problem of bi'ah reikanit, he has a separate chayav mita for having ketoret without the requisite ingredients. Amar Mar. Now we're going to go back to the braita, the issue that I noted in the braita, which is, uminayin shnotein ba malei hashan. How do we know you put malei hashan in there? Tamalomar v'chisa. Kra, l'kra. You're bringing another pasuk to prove what the first pasuk proved? You already told me that Ki Ba'anan Erei Al HaKapora teaches you about the Malei Hashan. Why do I need a second pasuk to teach me that the Malei Hashan is there? Amar Rav Yosef Achik Amar. Ein li ela ale Malei Hashan. I only know that you're allowed to use the leaves of the Malei Hashan. Ikar Malei Hashan minayin. The roots, how do I know you can use those? Tamal Omar v'chisa. So I have two psukim, one to teach me that you can use the leaves of the Malei Hashan, one to teach me you can use the root of the Malei Hashan. Don't we have just the opposite in a brayta? The Tanya, notan by ikar Malei Hashan haya mitamer v'olek imakel. He put in the roots of the Malei Hashan. It used to rise like a staff. Ad shemigia l'shmei korah, until it reaches the ceiling. Kevin shemigia l'shmei korah, once it reached the ceiling, mimashmesh v'yared b'kotalim. It spreads to the sides and then descends on the walls. Ad shemit alea bayit hashan. Until the house is filled, or until the Kodesh HaKodeshim is filled with smoke. Shenemar, Vabayit Yimale Ashan. Because the house will be filled with smoke, will be filled with the Kitoret. As Rashi points out, this is the natural way of smoke. As long as smoke goes up, what it'll end up doing is, when it reaches the ceiling, it'll spread across the ceiling. Once it's filled out the space on the ceiling, it'll start to descend down the walls and fill out the house. So what they're describing here is just the natural process of this smoke. The only thing that is unusual here is how it ascends, that it goes up in a straight makel, in a stick or staff-like form. So then that's what the Gemara says. You see here from the Braita that the Braita assumes that what is the ikar Malei Hashan? It's the ikar. The roots are the main thing that you would use for Malei Hashan. That's not the secondary item. That's the primary way that you would make Malei Hashan. So we have to rephrase Abaye in this way. I only know from the Pasuk, I would have thought only the roots are good enough to use. How do I know if you use the leaves of the Malei Hashan, that's okay? So I have two Pasukim. One to teach me that the root of the Malei Hashan works. The other one to teach me that the leaves of the Malei Hashan work. I have two Pasukim to teach me the same thing because had it been from one pasuk, I would have only known about the Ol Moed. The Ol Moed, which is found in the Mishkan, in the Midbar. So I would have thought that this is only applicable to the Ol Moed in the Mishkan, in the Midbar, because the original tzivui is given here in Achrei Mot by the Mishkan. Shiloh u'beit olamim minayin. How do I know that this also has application in the Mishkan Shiloh, where it has walls instead of a tent? It's not an Ol Moed. And Beit Olamim is the Beit Mikdash. Tamalomar b'chisa. I have a second pasuk to teach me this. We discussed earlier in the Masechta that Tosafot notes that in some places the Gemara assumes that Mishkan and Mikdash are synonymous. And whatever I know by the Mishkan, I know by the Mikdash, and vice versa. From the Psukim in Parshat Truma, which is Vasodi Mikdash v'Shachanti B'Tocham. So there you have the term Mikdash used, even though we're found in the Parshiota Mishkan. So over there, the Gemara says, oh, they're synonymous. Whatever we know by the Mishkan is true by the Mikdash. In other instances, we find that the Gemara looks for a second limud that relates to the Mishkan and Beit Olamim versus that would happen in the Mishkan and the Midbar, or the Ol Moed of the Midbar. So Tosafot notes that it's in cases where you would have a Havamina to say that this was unique to the Ol Moed. There might be a reason to believe that this is unique to the Ol Moed, and we wouldn't carry it forward. So here by the Ketoret, you could argue that this was unique to Aaron. This is Achrei Mot, Shnei Bnei Aaron, who brought a Ketoret into the Midash or into the Kodesh or Kodesh Kodeshim improperly. So this is the rectification of that bringing of the incorrect Ketoret or Esh Zara. So you might have thought that it's unique to the Midbar in some way, and it doesn't carry over into the Mishkan or the Beit Olamim. The answer is, no, we have a second pasuk to teach you. It's applicable to the Mishkan and the Beit Olamim. Now the Gemara continues, Hai, v'chein yaseh lo'ol moed ha'shochein itam b'toch tumatan nafka. So the Gemara says, you don't need that for this because we have the additional pasuk which teaches us, v'chein yaseh lo'ol moed ha'shochein itam b'toch tumatan, which is by the matnot dam. The Gemara learned that that teaches you that it applies to Beit Olamim and to the Mishkan. So I don't need that for this. Elohi kamar, ein li'elo b'yom ha'kipurim. It's only true on Yom Kippur. B'shar Yimot HaNashana Minayin. So he alters the limud and says, I have the limud here in Achrei Mot, which teaches me on the Torah of Yom Kippur, you need Malei Hashan. How do I know the daily Torah that was put on the Mizbeach Sahav also requires Malei Hashan? Tamalomar V'chisa. So you have two psukim here in Achrimot, one to teach you about the Ketoret of Yom HaKippurim, the other one to teach you about the Ketoret on a daily basis. Rav Ashi Amar, Chad de Mitzvah, V'chad de Akev. One of them is for a mitzvah, to mean that the Chadchila you need Malei Shan. Chad, the second pasuk is Le'akev, to tell you that it's even Bidiavad, that it's Me'akev. That's a general principle. Kodashim, we have a principle, when the Torah says it once, it means that's the proper way to do it. Says it twice, that means that you must do it. You don't have a choice anymore in doing it. So it makes it into even bidiyavad. It's mere akev. Tosafot does point out here, why do we need this? The whole parasha is covered by the word chukah. At the end, it says, Vayta lachem l'chukat olam, kodesh eshvi v'esor l'chodesh. We said that chukah means akev, and anything that has to do with avodat Yom HaKippurim, at least in the big day Lavan, is mere akev. What do I need a second pasuk here to teach me that it's akev? First answer he gives is, oh, because of the ketoret kol hashana. Because the Torah, the rest of the year, requires Malei Hashem, and we want to know that it's Me'akev the rest of the year. He says, that's a great answer, but Ve'en Zem Ein HaTeirutz. This is really not the answer, because T'mikara Kamar T'chad Kra L'Yom HaKippurim V'chad L'Shar Yimot HaShana. So first the Gemara introduced that one is for Yom Kippur, one is for the Shar Yimot HaShana. Then he gives an alternative answer. His alternative answer is no. They're both for Yom HaKippurim. One is Chatkila and one's Le'akev. So it sounds like he's not talking about Shar Yimot HaShana. Even though that's what Tosafot comes out as the only possibility of why you would need a second pasuk li akev over here. It's possible that you could suggest is that the chukah here applies to the avodot that are explicitly written here. When we go to the akev here, we're talking about Malei Hashan, which is a drosha out of the pasuk that the Kisa Anan tells you that you have to have Malei Hashan in there. Maybe that's not covered by chukah, and that's why you need a second pasuk to cover it. Rav Amar, chad onish v'chad azara. One of them comes to teach you that there's a lav, an isur here. The other one comes to teach you what the punishment is if you violate that isur. Tanya Rabbi Lazar Omer, velo yamut, onesh, ki ba'anan ere azara. So that's what we mentioned before. Velo yamut is mentioned twice. Once in the beginning when it says, al yavo b'chol eita lekodesh mi beit laparochet, al pnei hakaporet asher al aron, velo yamut, ki ba'anan ere al hakaporet. So he sees that as an azara, as a warning. You want to go in, you need the Anan HaKitoret. Later on we said that when he brings in the Ketoret, it says, V'natan HaKitoret L'Eish Dibnei Hashem, V'chisa Anan HaKitoret Tetu Kaporet HaShel Eidut V'lo Yamut. That comes to teach you, we know what happens if you don't, you're going to die. So that's his suggestion over here. Yachol Yushnehem Amurim Kodem Mitat Bnei Aron. You would think that both of them were mentioned before the Mitat Bnei Aron. Tamal Omer, the Parsha begins, Achrei Mot Shnei Bnei Aron. After they died, or after they passed away. So you would think, well, if the parsha starts, they're both afterwards. That's written in the future tense. I will in the future appear be'anan ala kaporet. Hakeitzad, azara kodem mita. The warning was prior to the mita. Vonesh achar mita, and the punishment was after the mitat bnei Amaron. My Talmudah, how do you distinguish? How do you know this? Amar Rav Amar Kra, ki be'anan ira'eh. He says, I will in the future be with the anan, v'adayim lo nira. And it hasn't happened yet. By the mitat b'shnei bnei Aaron, that's the first time we have Hashem appearing, because that's from Parshat Shmini. And in Parshat Shmini, Nadav and Avihu only entered to the Kodesh HaKodeshim and bring the Esh Zara after Aaron and Moshe finish the Avodah that day. The Shekhinah descends, and then they give a bracha to the Am. So the Shekhinah is already present. But it says here, Kibbe Anan Ere'e Alakaporet, implying that again that Anan does not mean Ketoret here, it means the Shekhinah, the presence of the Shekhinah. If it was after Mitat Bnei Aaron, Hashem's presence is already there. That happened earlier on Yom HaShmini. That's why when they bring in the Esh Zara, they're in trouble, because the Shekhinah is already there. But if it was beforehand, I would understand, Ki Be'anan, in the future I will appear, Al HaKaporet. So that makes sense if you're speaking prior to Mitat Bnei Aaron. If you're speaking after Mitat Bnei Aaron, what do you mean, Ki in the future? Are you already there? It's there already. So therefore, he says, the Azhara, the warning was prior to Mitat Bnei Aaron, but the Onesh is written in this Parsha, which is after Mitat Bnei Aaron. So Gemara says, Ve'la Maita Mi'anush. If that's the case, why would they punish with the death penalty? I mean, even if the warning came before, the death penalty was only discussed here in Achrimot, after they died. Kedetanyo, Rabbi Lazar Omer, lo meitu bnei Aaron, ela shohoru alocha bifnei Moshe Rabban. It's because they paskened alocha in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. My drosh, where do they know that from? It says, v'natnu bnei Aaron akoin eish al ha-mizbeach. It says that bnei Aaron have to place a fire on the mizbeach. We already learned. That means that they have to provide wood for the Mizbeach. We have the Marachot and the wood that has to be placed on the Mizbeach. Even though the fire descends from heaven to eat that which is on the Mizbeach, we know that was true all through Bayit Rishon, as well as in Parshat Shmini. Parshat Shmini, it says that a fire came down from heaven and ate up everything that was on the Mizbeach. So mitzvah lavim min hedjol. Despite the fact that there's a fire descending from heaven, there's still a mitzvah for the hedjol, for the Kohanim to place wood on the Mizbeach. Ein somchim al ha-neis. Even though the neis happened all the time, nevertheless, we put wood there because that's the natural way that things burn. So we're going to put wood on the marachot, or we're going to put it on the mizbeach. So there's a requirement that the hejot do this. They pasken that halacha in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. They bring the wood and the kindling and they light it. So they light the pyre that's on the mizbeach, despite the fact that they know that there's a fire coming down from heaven that's going to consume all the korbanot that are there. They pasken this halacha in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, that they should bring wood to put on the mizbeach there on the Yom HaShmini, and therefore they were punished. As Tosafot points out, throughout the Midrashim and throughout Shas, the Gemara has different reasons why Nadab and Avihu die. Now, the Torah gives you a reason, which is that they brought an Esh Zara. But even that is unclear exactly what that means, Esh Zara. The Torah doesn't tell us what that Esh Zara is. We assume that it's Ketoret, because they brought it in, and it's Esh Zara, which has a terminology that Ketoret Zara, which is used by the Ketoret in Parshat Tetzaveh. But it's not clear. Because it's not clear, what we have is throughout Shas, and again in the Midrashim, we have Tanaim discussing what their chait is. A lot of it has to do with the parshiot that are juxtaposed to the Parshat Shmini, where they die. So for instance, the parsha immediately afterwards is the Shtuye Yayin, that a Kohen may not nichnas into avodah b'shtuye Yayin. So the Gemara in one place says that they were nichnasim shtuye Yayin. Again, all of these come up from contextually, they're trying to figure out what the sin is. I'm not going to expound so much on it, but I will just say that there is a common denominator between all the reasons given by the Tanaim, and that is the breaking of bounds. That Nadab and Avihu overstep their bounds. And all the examples that we're giving, they're doing something that should have been bound or should have had boundaries, and they overstep it. For instance, Horei Olacha b'fnei Rabban. Paskan Olacha in front of your Rebbe is overstepping your bounds. Shtuye Yayin, drinking wine, is all about lowering inhibitions and stepping over the lines. There's numerous examples of what their failures were, and all of them involve overstepping their bounds, which we know is a problem that Nadav and Avihu have back from Parshat Mishpatim, where, depending, it's machloket again, Tanaim over there, if they did something wrong or not. But over there again, they might have overstepped their bounds at Har Sinai. So we see that this is a recurring theme with Nadav and Avihu, and therefore all the examples or the reasons that are given have that underlying common denominator between them. All right, so now, Yatzah Uvalo Derech Nisato. We saw that when the Mishnah says after he finished the Avodah there, he exits the way that he came in. Not only does he exit the way he came in, meaning following the path that he came in, but he also does it in a manner to remain facing the Kodesh HaKodeshim. He can't turn his back on Hashem. Nahani Mile, how do we know this is true? Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rav Yonatan Amakra. V'yavo Shlomo la Bama, asher b'giv'on Yerushalayim. Shlomo comes to the Bama. The Bama is the Mizbeach that was found in Giv'on, Yerushalayim. Obviously there's a problem here. Giv'on is found north of Yerushalayim. It's in Binyamin, Eretz Binyamin. So why is it calling it Giv'on and Yerushalayim at the same time? The Bama is from after the time of Churban Shiloh. The articles of Churban Shiloh got distributed in different places. The Aron ended up with the Plishtim, and then comes back later on and moves around within different people's houses. The Mishkan, or the Mizbeach, moved. It was originally in Nov, Ir HaKohanim, until Shaul destroys the city of Nov, Ir HaKohanim, and then it moves to Giv'on. So it's found in Giv'on. The Mizbeach itself is found in Giv'on. Shlomo goes out to Giv'on to be Makriv on the Mizbeach. He later on brings the Mizbeach and the Aron, he brings it all, consolidates it in the Meit HaMikdash. So now he goes out to the Bama, Asher B'Giv'on Yerushalayim, V'chim Ha'inyan Giv'on Etzel Yerushalayim. What does Giv'on have to do with Yerushalayim? They're two different locations. Ella, Meiti Shitziyato MiGiv'on LeYerushalayim, the Biyato MiYerushalayim LeGiv'on. Connects his leaving Giv'on to return to Yerushalayim to his coming from Yerushalayim to Giv'on. It's saying basically, Yerushalayim, Giv'on, making them interchangeable. You can flip them. Going from Yerushalayim to Giv'on or Giv'on to Yerushalayim. It's all the same. Ma biyato Yerushalayim Giv'on panav klape bama. Just like when he came from Yerushalayim to the Giv'on, he would face the Mizbeach because he's traveling to the Giv'on. So too, b'derech biyato, af yitziyato migivon Yerushalayim. So too, when he left, he departed from Giv'on to Yerushalayim, panav klape bama. then his face, the bamak, derech biato, the way that he had entered. So that's the source for this in the psukim. Obviously, he didn't face the bama all the way back to Yerushalayim, only until he was out of sight of the bama, meaning that the requirement to face the bama or whatever object we're speaking about here is only when they're within visible sight. Once you leave visible sight from them, then you can turn your back and continue on your way. The kohanim, when they do avoda in the mikdash, ulevim b'duchanam, same with the levim over there, v'Yisrael b'mamadam, and Yisrael b'mamadam, k'shein niftarim, when they leave or take leave, lo yam yachzerim p'neihem v'ochim, you didn't turn around and walk out. Ela mitzadadim p'neihem v'ochim, they turn sideways and they slide out. I mean that they give respect towards the kedusha or the makom hakodesh as they're leaving. They don't turn your back on it. And as Shaul mentioned here, that is the practice when you're leaving shul, is not to turn your back on the shul, but to turn around and to bow and to walk out backwards from the shul. Right, by the koto, with the same thing. You're moving away from a place of kedusha, so you have to take leave in a proper manner. Taking leave means that you bow and you back out to show your respect towards the kedusha or the individual that you're leaving. So here we say it's true by the kohanim that are working in the mikdash, true by the levim who are singing in the mikdash, and true of the Israelim who are present in the mikdash to be representatives of Klal Yisrael over the korbanot ha-tzibur. And in addition, chayin tamid ha-niftar mirabo. A tamid that leaves his rebbe, lo yachzir panav ve'elech. Don't turn your back on your rebbe and walk away. Ela mitzadeh panav olech. You have to turn sideways and move out. It's interesting, the Gemara always uses the words mitzadeh, which has a connotation of being sideways, rather than walking backwards. They don't require you to walk backwards and to bump into things or stumble on things. They're sideways, yeah, turn your face, but show kavod. I mean, turning your back is clearly a demonstration of not being respectful. So what we want you to do is, you're leaving. We understand that you're walking away. But don't walk away in such a manner that you turn your back, but rather that you give some respect to that, whether it's turning your head or your body slightly, so you show respect towards it. We don't want you turning your back on him. Kiha, now we have an example list. God, to Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar got a miftar mined Rabbi Yochanan, when he used to take leave of Rabbi Yochanan. So here, what are the case? Kadav abay Rabbi Yochanan lisguye, when Rabbi Yochanan wanted to leave, have a gochin, Rabbi Elazar used to bow his head, koi, Rabbi Elazar duchtei, had to have a mikse Rabbi Yochanan mined. So stand in place with his head bowed until Rabbi Yochanan took leave. So that's how, when Rabbi Yochanan was leaving, that's how Rabbi Elazar, his student, acted when Rabbi Yochanan was leaving. Rabbi Elazar is a Talmid Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan. He learns by Rabbi Yochanan, but later on we find him arguing on Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, second generation Amor in Eretz Yisrael, along with Rabbi Yochanan. But we find in the beginning he's a Talmid, but later on that he is considered to be a peer of Rabbi Yochanan's. When Rabbi Elazar wanted to take leave, he used to walk backwards until he could no longer see Rabbi Yochanan. So over here he talks about him backing out or always keeping his face towards Rabbi Yochanan. We have another example of this, which is when he used to take leave of Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef is Abaye and Rabba's Rebbe. Remember, Abaye and Rabba grow up with Rabba. They both lost their parents early in life. And they grew up as Talmidim of Rabba. Rabba and Rav Yosef are peers at the same time. Rabba is the Rosh Yeshiva before Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef only comes to Yeshiva after Rabba is the Rosh Yeshiva for 22 years. That's based on the Gemara in Brachot, because he knew that once he ascended to the position of Rosh Yeshiva, that he would pass away. So he waited till after Rabba was in Rosh Yeshiva, 22 years. So he extended his life, in a sense, by doing that, by not taking that position of power. But Rabbi Yosef is also a Rebbe of Abaye and Rava. So here, Rava is acting towards his Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef. Karava miftar mined Rabbi Yosef, ava ha'akazo lo chorei. He used to walk backwards, ad minak fan korei, until he bruised his legs, and he used to bump into things on his way out, because he wasn't looking, he was backing away. Umidvasen as skrufta dbe Rabbi Yosef damo. And the threshold of Rabbi Yosef's house, or Beit Midrash, was covered in blood, meaning that he was injuring himself on the way out, but because out of respect for his Rebbe, he didn't want to turn his face away from Rabbi Yosef. Now, Shaul pointed out, Rabbi Yosef is a sagi nahor. He is blind. Amrele the Rabbi Yosef. They told Rabbi Yosef what Rava was doing. Rabbi Yosef was not aware of what Rava was doing because he couldn't see what Rava was doing. Amalei, hey Rava, the trom reshech akula bracha. It should be Hashem's will that your head should be raised above the whole city, meaning that you should become the Rosh Yeshiva based on his actions. So Rabbeinu Chananel brings as an alternative version, that was the Hiratzon that he blessed them, that the halacha should always be like him, which is what happened. Abai v'rova, halacha k'rova. Now, what you see from here, and what Shaul was mentioning is, that the respect granted to the Rebbe has nothing to do with the Rebbe. It's not about the Rebbe seeing you. It has to do with your kavod towards the Rebbe. Because over here you see that Rav acted in this manner, despite the fact that Rav Yosef had no clue that this was going on. And so, when we talk about kavod, kavod is not about necessarily always the individual themselves that you're granting the kavod to. It's also for you personally, how you conduct yourself in the face of an individual who's deserving of your kavod. And therefore, Rav felt incumbent that he walk out in such a manner, even though Rav Yosef had no idea that he was walking out that way, because that's the way you treat a Rebbe. That's the way that you have to act towards your Rebbe. So it's an important nuance in the story, even despite the fact that Rav Yosef was not aware of it, you still had to grant him that kavod and act in that manner. Now, Amar Rabbi Alexandri, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Once again, here we find in Masechet Yoma. All right, so now, Amar Rabbi Alexandri, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Now we have a memra once again in Yoma that has to do with Dinei Tefillah, not found in Masechet Brachot, but found in Masechet Yoma. We had that earlier in the Masechta as well. Here once again we have another memra, Dinei Tefillah that are not found in Masechet Brachot, which is Hamit Palel, Samu Davis, Tzarich Shiafsia, Shalosh Pesiot Achurav. After you finish davening, you have to take 3 steps backwards. V'achakach Yitein Shalom. And then only after that, you should give greetings, or here means to take depart. There's an important Rashi over here, it's coming up in a minute. But Rashi says, Shamit Palel, person who's davening, ro'et smoke, ilu shechina l'mu panav. God is standing opposite of him. Then we stand in davening, Shaviti Hashem l'negdi tamid. That's particularly true when one stands in Shemone Esrei. That's the unbelievable thing of Shemone Esrei. The unbelievable privilege that we're given daily to stand before God. Literally talking to God, face to face with God. So that's the privilege of Shemone Esrei. Yeah, we dive in, but we dive in, we're suddenly removed. When we walk into Shemone Esrei, we're walking in to talk to God and speak to Him directly. It's a tremendous privilege, a privilege that you would think man doesn't have. And yet we're granted it 3 times a day to go and stand before God. So because of that, you have to have a certain protocol about how you come before God. One of those is, first of all, you take 3 steps forward when we enter into Shemone Esrei. Because you're walking into the king, to stand before the king. That's number one. Number two is, when you finish and you depart from the king, you take 3 steps backwards. You back out like you would when you're leaving a Rebbe, like you're leaving a king. You have to back out. If you were at the king and he dismissed you, you would walk away from the king with your head bowed, and you would back out of the area out of respect for the king. So too over here. So Amar Le Rav Mordechai Kevin Shepasah Shlosh Psiot Acharav Hatam Yibayla Lemekam. Once you've taken 3 steps backwards, you have to stay there in place. Mashal Tamid Haniftar Mirabo. It's the same thing of a Tamid that takes depart from his Rebbe. Im Choser La'Alter. If after he takes depart, he just walks right back, or he just takes off, similar to a dog who has thrown up his food and then just goes and walks and sits in it. It's improper behavior to take depart and then just walk right back into it. It shows that, first of all, you weren't really taking depart. And number two, it's a lack of kavod, because you're just walking back and you're just running back. It's like as if it's a burden to you to walk out this way. You have to stay in place to show that respect. So this leads to a number of halachot. We'll see in 1 second. I'll consolidate it after we finish the sugi here. Tani nami ochi veba breita. Mitpaleo shayich shiafsia shlosh psiot achurav, has to walk back 3 steps. Vachachach yitain shalom. And then he gives shalom. Ve'im lo atzachain. If he didn't do this, ro'o ilo shalo yitpaleo. It's better that he doesn't start to daven. If you're not going to finish properly, don't start. Don't get into davening. But we have other expressions like that in the Gemara. It's better that he wasn't born. If you don't know how to conduct yourself properly when you come before Melech Melchei HaMelechim, then don't enter, because then you don't know how to get out. You don't know how to leave, take leave properly. So Mishum Shmaya Amru, it's unlikely this is Shmaya. Shmaya is one of the very early Tanaim, and here we have Memrot of Amoraim over here. So it's likely that it's Mishum Rav Shmaya Amru. Shenotein Shalom Liyamin V'achar Kach L'Smol. When you're giving shalom, you go to the right first, and then to the left. Shenemar. How do we know you go to the right first? Mimino eshdat lamo. Because when God gave the Torah, He gave it out of His right hand. Ve'omer. In addition to that, it says, Ipol mitzidcha elef, from your side for fall away 1,000. Urvava miminecha, and tens of thousands from your right side. Implying that mitzidcha means your left side first. Where it says, Ma'ivomer. Why do you need 2 psukim over here? Bachlok and Rashi and Tosafot, that's what the Avamin is. So if you think that it's just normal to go to the right side, I have the second pasuk. What does that mean, that it's normal to go to the right? So the way Rashi reads it is, Rashi says, well, if I was backing up, and then I had to make a decision of whether I go to the left or the right, what do we always say? Go to the right first. So I would think that, since that's the Orach Arad, go to the right, when I back away from Hashem, I also go to the right. Along comes the second pasuk to teach you that Ipol Mitzidcha Elef Urvava Miminecha. Left goes first, then right. Tosafot learns it that, based on the first pasuk I would just said, why did Hashem give the Torah with his right hand? Because normally people give with their right hand. Their right hand is stronger, so they normally use their right hand. So that's why Hashem gave it. But that's not governing in terms of how I would do my Osei Shalom. So I bring the second pasuk, which tells me, in contrast to Yamin, left goes first. Now, what's the answer about this? Why are we doing this? Because you're standing opposite God. And when you're standing opposite God, yes, it's true for you on your personal basis, you would pick the right first. But when you're standing opposite God, you go to the left, which is God's right. And so that's why we go to the left. We go to the left, which is the Yamin of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why here, Ipol Mitzidcha Elef Urvava Miminecha, is because God is there helping you. He's standing there helping you, but that's why you go to the left and then the right. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when you're facing Him, you would depart from His right first and then from His left, which will be the opposite for you. It'll be your left and then his right. All right, so then we have Rava Chazir le'Abaye da'im shalom le'yamino b'reisha. Rava saw Abaye giving shalom, meaning bowing to his right side first. Amalei misvarat le'yamin didach. He says, you think it's your right? The small didach kamin. I meant to your left, av'yamino shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the right of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amrav Chia b'rei de Rav Huna, chazina lu le'Abaye v'Rava, depasi lu shlosh psiot b'kriya achat. When they took the three step back, they did it in one bow. When you put this all together, consolidate it, this is how you leave Shmoneh Esrei. When you leave Shmoneh Esrei, first of all, you move with your left foot first. That was just mentioned here, because you don't want to look like you're rushing away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you move your left foot back almost like a half step. Then you move your right foot a full step back. And then you have your left foot meet your right foot. Those are the shlosh psiot that we are talking about here. The minimum of a psia is your toe to your heel. Although we usually take normal steps. You're not supposed to take psiot gasot, as is brought by the Ochot Chaim and is quoted by the Ramah, is that you don't take big steps back. You take smaller steps back. You don't have to take really, really small steps, although that's sufficient to go from your foot to toe to heel. That's enough of a space to move back. So you start with your left, you move it back a half step, then you move your right a full step, and then you have your left meet it. While you're doing that, you're bowed in that entire process. You're backing out while you're bowed. You're taking leave of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you're taking leave of a king. You don't walk out upright. You walk back bowed, and that's bekriachat, meaning that you stay bowed the whole way back. Once you reach the back and you're bowed, then you move to your left side, and you say, Oseh Shalom Bimromav. Then you switch over to your right side, and you say, Hu Yaseh Shalom Aleinu. And then, Be'alkol Yisrael, you do in the middle. So that's the proper way to take leave. Then, once you've done that, you have to stay in place. You have to stay in place a minimum of Dalet Amot, the amount of time it would take to walk Dalet Amot. If you're finished before the shatz is finished, you should wait there until Kedusha, and then you walk back three steps to re-enter to face the Kadosh Baruch Hu when you take Kedusha. At minimum, you're supposed to wait there until the Chazaras Shatz begins. Until he begins the Shmoneh Esrei, you should wait there. The truth is, you never have to go back forward. If it's later on, if you're davening, you don't have to walk back forward. You could take leave right from there. You can stop there. There's no obligation to walk back forward. So that's first of all, you don't have to walk back. Number two is, you do not have to bounce up and down in place when you take three steps back. That's probably a residual from people. Once you took the three steps back, when they came to Kedusha, they'd go three steps forward, and then they would be in Kedusha. So now people always go back, and they're bouncing up in place. There's no necessity to do that when you back up. When you back up, you're bowed. You do your left, right, and then middle. And then you're upright, and you say the Hiratzon in place. You have to wait the minimum of Dalet Amot. And that's it. You can take leave. You don't have to walk forward. That's it. What Shaul points out is, maybe the same should be true in the beginning of Shmoneh Esrei. That turns out to be a machloket between the Orach HaShulchan and the Mishnah Brura as to whether you need to take three steps back in order to take three steps forward. The three steps forward are clearly a process of entering in before the king. The question is, are the three steps back just an enabler to take three steps forward? So therefore, if you don't need to take them back, then you can walk forward. You can just walk forward. Or are the three steps back part of that preparatory process, and therefore they're obligatory? So Machloket Mishnah Berurah and Aruch HaShulchan with regards to the beginning of Shmoneh Esrei, where you have to take 3 steps back before you take the 3 steps forward. But at the end of Shmoneh Esrei, you only have to take the 3 steps back, and that is sufficient. Again, in one bow, to left, to the right, to the middle, and then stationary in place. And that's what we get out of this sugya that we had just here. Alright, Umitzpalel, Tfilah, Kitzara, Bebaita, Chitzon. He gives a small tefillah in the Kodesh after he exits the Kodesh HaKodeshim. My mitzale. What does he daven over there? What does he say? So we actually know this from the tefillah on Yom HaKippurim, the Musaf Yom HaKippurim. Rava bar Ravado, Rabin bar Ravado. So this is Rav and Ravin, the brothers, who are children of Ravada. So Ravayu Mishmeid Rav. They both said it over the name of Rav. Amre, he says, here at Soma Fenecha Hashem Lokenu. Shetei Shana Zu. The girsa that we have is Gshuma Shchuna. The girsa that is, you can see on the side, is that it's Shchuna Gshuma. It should be hot and rainy. Shchuna Maliutohi? Hot? Is that really good? You need a hot year? We want rain, we understand. But why do you need it to be a hot year? Aleima. Im Shchuna Teig Shuma. If it's hot, it should be rainy. Meaning that if it's dry because of the heat, then rain should come to take away the fact that it's dry. That he used to finish this way. Lo ya'ade ovid shulton mi beit Yehuda. It should not be removed. One who carries the scepter from Beit Yehuda, meaning the lineage of David, should not be removed from power. Lo yu'amecha Yisrael tzuchim lefarnes ze mizeh. Your children, Klal Yisrael, should not have to be mifarnes, take a living or livelihood, or sustain themselves from each other, but they should all have parnaso. And the tefillot of the travelers or the wayfarers should not enter before you, because those that are traveling don't want it to rain, because it's difficult to travel in the rain, especially in their day, where they weren't necessarily covered and the roads were made out of mud, then it was very difficult. The Ovrei Drachim, we didn't want the rain to come. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. Chanina ben Dosa is an unusual individual. We'll meet him again in Masechet Tanit. Many, many stories about him and miraculous stories about him. Here's just a little taste of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. Habagazel Baorcha. He was traveling. He was on his way somewhere. Shoda Mitrale. It started to rain on him. Amar Ribono Shel Olam, Kol Olam Kulo Benachat, V'Chanina B'Tzar. Says, wait, the whole world is happy now, and I'm in a difficult position. Pasuk Mitra. There was no rain. The rain stopped because of him. Then, Kiyata the Beite, when he reached his home, Amar Ribono Shel Olam, Kol Olam Kulo B'Tzar. Everybody else now is in a difficult situation. They need the rain. V'Chanina B'Nachat. And I'm in a good position here. I'm back home. But also, he didn't own any fields. So, he didn't need the rain. At the Mitra, the rain came. So that's the persona of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa we'll see in the Gemara and Tanit, that basically he speaks to God and things happen. Where he says, stop the rain, it stops. Then he says, start the rain and it starts raining. And Rabbi Yosef, ma hanyalei tzlote de kohen gadol legabe Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. Look at the greatness of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa is that the tefillah of the kohen gadol didn't even impact. The tefillah of the kohen gadol is that you shouldn't listen to the Ovrei Drachim. And here, Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa in Ovrei Derech is able to stop the rain. That's the godless of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. Tanu Rabbanan. Maseh b'kohen gadol achad she'riach tefilato. That he tarried in his tefillah. V'nimnu echav ha'kohanim l'kanes acharav. They were trying to decide who should go in after him to pull him out or see what happened. Itchilo heim nichnasim. They began to enter. V'hu yotzei. And all of a sudden he appeared. Amlo mipnei ma'arachta b'tefilatecha. Why did you take such a long time in your tefillah? Amlem kasha b'enechem she'tfalati alechem al beit ha'mikdash lo yacharev. So you're upset. I was davening for you and for this Beit HaMikdash that it should not be destroyed. I was beseeching Hashem on our behalf. So why are you upset about it? Amrlo, alti ra'ubil asot kain. Don't do that on a regular basis. Sherei shanino. They quote our Mishnah. Lo haya marich b'tfilato k'dei shelo avit et am. He did not tarry in his tefillah in order not to shock or frighten the am, because they would think that the Kohen Gadol had passed away in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, which obviously was inauspicious. If he passed away in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and then they'd have to go in and run in and pull him out, it would not be a good situation. So don't engender that fear. There's nobody else in there with the Kodesh HaKodeshim with him. They have no idea what happened to him. So don't tarry so that people don't worry that something went wrong inside of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Again, this reinforces what we spoke about yesterday, this idea that Kohanim Gedolim did pass away in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Okay, next Mishnah. Mishnital Aron. Once the Aron disappeared, Even Haita Sham Mimot Nevi'im Rishonim. There was a stone there from the times of the Nevi'im Roshonim. As Rashi says, Nevi'im Roshonim means the time of David and Shmuel. Ushtia Eta Nikrit. And its name was Shtia, and that's where the Eben Hashtia comes from. Gvoa Min Aretz Shalosh Etzbot. It's three finger breadths off the ground. Ve'alea Yanotein. On it, he placed it. And what it seems like is that at that point in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, remember that the Beit HaMikdash is built on a mountain. Built on the top of a mountain. Today, what we see is the squared out area of the mountain. Herod later on builds retaining walls around the mountain. That's the Kotel HaMaravi. Is a retaining wall put up by Herod to hold the dirt that he poured in. He basically landfilled around the mountain to create a flat top in order to build the Beit HaMikdash. In the time of Shlomo Melech, they built it on the mountain, at the top of the mountain. So they're using the bedrock to build the Mikdash. That's why the Mikdash is skewed on the platform to the northwestern side, is because that's where the bedrock is. That's the highest point of the mountain. So they built it on the mountain itself. Herod later on comes and fills it in with the landfill to create a much larger platform on which the Mikdash sits. First of all, so the people can come up, they have large areas around it. But the part of the Kodesh HaKodeshim is basically what we would say at the peak of the mountain. That's where the bedrock comes up. So this Eben Hashtia, it seems to be that there was a piece of bedrock that extended up into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Was left there because of this Mesora, that it was the Eben Hashtia. The Eben Hashtia we'll see in the Gemara about the Eben Hashtia. But that's why there's this piece of rock that is still there, meaning that it's still part of the bedrock, the underlying bedrock of the mountain, even though they had flattened out the whole area with landfill. So, but this was still part of that original bedrock in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Not all at Adam, Mishaya Memareis Bo. He finished with the Ketoret, he's gone back out. He gets the blood of the par that the person who was mixing it was standing with there. Nichnas the Makom Shenichnas. He goes back into the place he was, meaning that he goes back into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Vamad, Bimkom Shamad, between the Ben Abadim. And then he sprinkles from the blood. Achad damalo v'shev lamato. One up and seven down. We'll discuss what that means. He wasn't intending to have it go up or down on the kaporet, on the aron itself. Like a matzlif. Like a matzlif, as Rashi says here, as he did earlier in the Masechta back on Ted Vav, he says, lo yadati lishono. I don't know what matzlif means. The Gemara explains that matzlif means like a whip. So like a whip, which is, first of all, on the ground, the blood is lined up. The blood goes onto the ground, not on anything else, not on the parochet later on, or not here on the aron itself. It's on the ground in front of the parochet, and on the ground in front of the aron. That's number one. Kimat sleif, and it's in a single row. That's one. Number two is, the way that he sprinkles the blood up and down, that Tosafot Yishanim discussed earlier back on Ted Bob, which is that the way his palm of his hand is. The palm of his hand facing up, or the palm of his hand facing down. Like a person who's digging a whip, he first has to raise the whip, and then he has to bring it down. So that's the idea of lamalo and lamato, is the direction of your hand movement of the way that you sprinkle the blood. So it's up or down movement. That's the difference between the malo and the mato. Pekacha yamuneh, this is familiar to you from Musaf of Yom HaKippurim. Achat, which is counting, the Gemara will discuss why this is, so he doesn't confuse himself. He has to do one up and then seven down. If he counted just straight numbers, he wouldn't know if he did the one above or below. So this way he counts. Achat is the malo. Then achat v'achat means one above, and then achat is now beginning to count for the ones that he does sheva lamato. And then v'achat v'shtayim, v'achat v'shalot, v'achat v'arba, v'achat v'chamesh, v'achat v'shesh, v'achat v'sheva. So the achat is speaking about the mala, and the sheva is the mato. So that's how he keeps track of it and not lose count. So it's through this process. Yotza v'nicho alakan zahav shebeichal. And then he goes and takes that and puts it on the golden stand that is in the heichal in the kodesh. That's by the mizbech hazahav. There's a stand there where he can put the utensil that has the blood in it. All the utensils that had the blood in them were not flat on their bottoms. They had pointed bottoms, so they could never put it down, so there would never be blood left around by accident. If you had to put it down, it would spill. So you had to keep it up. There was in the Kodesh, by the Mizbech Azab, it's only useful in very rare moments when he's going to the Kodesh, the Kodesh, Kodeshim, that it was a canister which would hold up, a base, that would allow you to put the utensil that was holding the blood into it without it spilling over. He has to do this because now he has to go and bring in other blood. And we'll see why here. Hevilu et seir, they bring him the seir l'Hashem, so he goes back out. Shachato, he shechs the seir l'Hashem, v'kibel mizraket amo. Then he takes another utensil and accepts, is mekabel the blood from the seir l'Hashem. Nichnas l'makom shenichnas, he goes back into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. V'amad b'makom shamad, between the Ben Abadim. V'izam imenu, achad l'malo v'shev l'mato, he does the same matnot that he did with regards to the par. And that is v'kacha yamune, and this as he counts it, achat, achat be'achat, achat v'shtayim v'chule. Yatzo v'nichol akan azav, ashenish. Then he comes out and places it on the holder outside by the mizbeach azav, the second base that is in the kodesh, and puts it there. Rabbi Yudomer lo yashem elakan echad bilvad. There's only one holder there. for good reason, which is that we don't want him leaving things around. So if he has only one holder, he has to pick up the other one before he puts down this one. So he's always holding something in his hand so that nothing gets left behind. For the Chachamim, there's two bases over there that he can place it down. The Tal Dama Par, now he takes the Dama Par again. Viniach Dama Seir, and he places down the Dama Seir. This sounds like it's according to Rabbi Yehuda now. Just first he has to take the Dama Par and then put down the Dama Seir because there's only one base. Bizami Men Ala Parochet Shekeneged Aromi Bachutz. He lines himself up centered on the Parochet when he's on the outside now. So he's in the Kodesh, facing the Kodesh HaKodeshim, where the Aron would be in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and he sprinkles on the Parochet, not literally again on the Parochet, but on the floor before the Parochet. Again, Achad Lamala V'Shev Lamata, the same type of Matanot. Loya Mitzkavein. He was not Mitzkavein to do it up or down, but rather, Eler Kimat Sleep, the same one that we had before. Kacha Yemone V'chule, and now he counted again, Achad, Achad V'Achad, and then so on and so forth. Natal Dama Seir, V'Niach Dama Par. Then he picks up the Dama Seir and puts down the Dama Par. Again, this is according to Rabbi Yehuda, where he can't put down the Dama Par until he picks up the Dama Seir. For the Chachamim, he could put down the Dama Par first, and then pick up the Dama Seir, because they have two bases over there. He does the same Matan Dam again on the Parochet. Shekeneged Aron Mibachutz, on the Parochet outside in the Kodesh, facing the Parochet, but facing where the Aron would be. Chadamal v'shev l'mata v'chule again. Then, Ira Dama Par l'doch Dama Seir. He mixes the Dam now. He pours the Dama Par into the Dama Seir. Natanet amalei bereikan. And then afterwards, he pours it back again to the empty one. Which here he poured from the Dama Par into the Dama Seir. And then he pours that mixture back into the canister of the Dama Par to make sure that it gets mixed well. And then he's going to do the matnot on the Mizbeach Zahav. Madonna and the Mizbeach Zahav are done with the mix, the Dama Par and the Seir together. We'll see, there's a machloket about that later on. But that's why he's mixing them together at this point. So there is a problem. There is one thing, which is the Gemara in Kodoshim talks about the fact that when Rav Shimon bar Yochai went to the Gnizot in Rome, they found the Parochet. And on the Parochet, there was blood spots like a matzlif, which makes it sound like they actually did get it onto the Parochet, but the Mefashim, the Shonim, over there say it splashed. And he was doing it on the floor in front of him, but it splashed onto the Parochet. And how it got lined up exactly straight, okay. If it was splashing, it doesn't seem like it was straight, but they still said it was kematzlif, that's how you knew it was the Parochet. It's interesting what you're saying, because it's not clear here that it has to be on the ground. And based on that, Gemara would sound like it was done on the Parochet, not on the ground. Although everybody says that based on this Mishnah, that it was done on the ground in front of it, but it splashed onto the Parochet sometimes. Okay, Mishin Nignas Loktoni. It doesn't say in our Mishnah, when the Aron was put into Gniza, Ela Mishin Nitaltan. It said when it was taken away. So in the Gemara previously, we said that the Diuk out of the Mishnah was that the Aron was put into Gniza. Because it says, by Mikdash Sheni, there was no Aron, because it went into Gniza. Over here we're saying there is an Aron, but it was taken away. So what is that? Command Amar Aron Galad Bavel, which we discussed yesterday. I mentioned as a Machloket Tanaim as to what happened to the Aron. Yesterday we saw the Deya, that it went into Gniza. Yoshiyahu HaMelech puts it into Gniza. Today we see the opinion that it was taken by Nebuchadnezzar. Titania Rabbi Eliezer Omer Aron Galad Bavel. The Aron was taken into captivity to Bavel, Shneamar. Ulu Tshuvat HaShana Shalach Melech Nebuchadnezzar Ve'vieu Bavela in Klei Chemdat Beit Hashem. It's talking about Yoyachin. That the following year, Nebuchadnezzar sends to take Yoyachin, meaning that he was appointed king for a very short time. He brings him into captivity in Bavel. Along with that, he brings Klei Chemdat Beit Hashem, the most beautiful or the best of the Kelim of Beit Hashem. So what would that be? That would be the Aron. Shimba Yochai Amar Aron Galala Bavel. The Aron was taken to Bavel. Rabbi Shimba Yochai has that same opinion. Shinemar, Lo Yivater Davar Amar Hashem. There will be nothing left, says Hashem. Ilu Asirita Dibrot Shabal. So the Gemara is playing on is Lo Yivater Davar. They're saying Davar doesn't mean nothing will be left behind, but rather Lo Yivater Dibur, the Davar of Amar Hashem. The Dibur that Hashem said. What's the Dibur that Hashem said? That he gave the Asirita Dibrot at Sinai. So Lo Yivater means he took the Aseret HaDibrot. Where the Aseret HaDibrot found? They're found in the Aron. So because of that, Rav Shimon Yochai says that the Aron was taken into captivity. Rav Yehuda, whether it's over here, Ben Lakish, Omer Aron Bimkomoni Gnas. It was put into Gniza in its place. Shinemar, Vayiru Rashi Abadim Min HaKodesh Al Pnei Advir. This is the Pasuk in Melachim Aleph that tells us that the Badim of the Aron used to poke through the Parochet. This is what I said yesterday. There was a wall there and a doorway and then a Parochet in the doorway. So they used to come, the Badim, Min HaKodesh Al Pnei HaDvir, they used to poke into the Dvir, V'lo Yiru Achutza, but they were not visible on the outside. V'yusham Ad HaYom HaZeh. They're there till today. Adayom Hazeh, wait, if it's taken into Galut, it's not there Adayom Hazeh. Adayom Hazeh means till today. How is it still there today? It was put into Geniza. It was buried down below. The Sheol put into Geniza and it's still there. The Aron is still there. Adayom Hazeh, it's still in the Mikdash. Upliga de Ula, this argues on Ula, Damar Ula, Shal Rabbi Matya ben Harashi, Rabbi Shimba Yochai Beromi. Matya ben Harashi asked Rabbi Shimba Yochai when he was in Rome, Bechi Machash Rabbi Eliezer Melamdenu, Pamri Shona Ushnia, Aron Galada Bavel. After Rabbi Eliezer teaches us once and then twice that the Aron was taken into captivity in Bavel, Bishona Ha Damran, one of the first ones what we said, Vayuvieu Bavelim Play Chemdat Beit Hashem, so that we already had one proof that it was taken. Shnia Mahi, what's the second proof? And it was like that. Dichtiv veyatsa mibat Zion kol hadara. So that's in Eicha we say that from Bat Zion left all of its glory, all the glory of Zion is taken away. My kol hadara, what's the glory? So you could have just said the glory is the Aron, but else he says chadra. Chadra means the room. What's the room? The room. The room is the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So what was taken away? That which was in that one room, the Aron, was taken away. That's been removed. The glory of Klal Yisrael has been taken away. So there's two proofs to the fact that the Aron was taken into captivity. Ata mai, ata omer. You, what do you say? Malo, shani omer, Aron bimkomo nignas. I say that the Aron was put into Geniza in its place. Shenemar v'yiruchu abadim, and he quotes the pasuk that was quoted before by Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish. So we have a machloket as to what the position of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was. We have originally the Gemara quotes Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is saying that it was taken away to Bavel. And over here we have Ula who quotes a story from Rabbi Matthew ben Harash in speaking of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, where Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says that he believes there was Nignas bimkomo, that it was in Geniza in a place. So we have a machloket as to what the position of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was, whether he thinks it went into Galut or it was Nignas bimkomo. But clearly here we have a machloket Tanaim as to whether the Aron was taken to Bavel or was put in Geniza. And our Mishnah, when it says Mishnital Aron, the Aron was taken away, makes it sound like this Tana believes that it was taken to Bavel because it was taken away and not Nignas. Not Mishin Nignas Aron, but Mishnital Aron. Since Mishnital Aron sounds like it was taken into captivity. All right, we'll stop over here.